Good morning, Amber.
Morning.
Today we're going to look at this Artisan Photographs box, published by Multiples, Inc. in 1970. It's a curious, classic, boxed edition from the 60s and 70s. It's included in most survey exhibitions of both Multiples and Artist Books, as the contents of this box have a combination of Artist Books and Multiples, a multiple by Rauschenberg called Revolver, which essentially is a small size version of the larger, I guess, unique work done from around the same vintage. And in addition, it includes a multiple.
Revolver, the large unique work, was that a public sculpture?
No, it's an in gallery type.
Gallery sculpture.
Yeah, exactly. That essentially the work here, which I'll show in a minute, mimics in that it's made out of these plexiglass discs, and I believe the unique version revolves, thus Revolver.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, this box also includes a multiple that is essentially some kind of bookcase that lights up, or that there is a light feature by an artist
named... Cardboard bookcase.
Yeah, by an artist named Tom Gormley, who I guess in the 60s... was somehow associated with these artists of otherwise great renown or that are well known. But he seems to have headed towards more of the design world. He's not really mentioned even as a footnote, you might say, for this period. I know two things by him, just this box. He provided an image for this Art Cash event that was some sort of fundraiser in the late 60s, or I guess it's an early 70s event that went on in New York City. Warhol also participated, as well as Robert Whitman and a handful of other artists, maybe even Øyvind Falstrom. In any case, regarding this box... this box is comes in two forms, typically. That is, it comes with all the contents, which this does, and
it's
more,
11 o'clock.
More commonly, it comes with two items lacking. That is, the Revolver and this Gormley. It has something to do with the production costs, I believe, which... They didn't finish the edition, or they only decided to produce so many based on the cost. I don't know exactly what the story is, but...
So they produced the whole edition without those two items, and then those two items may have come later or something?
Well, it was always intended to be a complete thing, but I don't know why, but it appears that... these two works, the Gormley work and the Rauschenberg, are most often not to be found with these boxes.
So how many of them were made?
It's an edition of 1,200. However, I've been told that only 600 were made. And I don't know if that means 600 in with all the contents and 1,200 and then the 600 plus the. Plus 600 more that were including everything but these two items.
Hmm.
I'm not sure, and that's not confirmed anyway. This is something that I purchased this the Revolver and this box from somebody.
So you
that
didn't purchase it as a complete set yourself. You had to go and get get the items.
Correct. I purchased in my collection before I bought this box. I had another box which included everything but the Gormley.
Uh huh.
And I purchased a box from Walter Koenig, who purchased a large stock of these boxes. from, I'm imagining, Multiples Inc. or one of the partners of Multiples Inc., maybe Colorcraft, whoever owned Colorcraft, offloaded a certain percentage of these boxes because Koenig had some hundreds of them. And in going through one of his boxes, which I was going to buy at a certain price, there was this Gormley. It's obviously, you can see, a little bit damaged, but it had the Gormley and everything else but for the Rauschenberg. And so he just sort of gave me this Gormley, despite the fact that he didn't think it was supposed to, because it wasn't supposed to be in there, as a kind of gift for some reason. I'm trying to get to my point here. Later, there was a donation given to the Walker Art Center by someone, I'm imagining a writer, okay, who gave this box, another box, to the Walker, which included everything but the Gormley, but it had two versions of the revolver in it, believe it or not. One with a different gauge of plexi than the other version, almost a prototype. And on this letter, or in this note inside the box, there is this mention of, intended as an edition of 1,200 copies, but in fact about 600 copies exist. I don't know what that means. This variant copy has two versions of the Rauschenberg revolver. So I've never seen another copy of this that had this different gauge of plexi for this work, but so I'm imagining this may have been given to somebody who was reviewing this or was sent it for advice or something in the production of it. Anyway, a lot of that information is not important, but what is important is that this was the title of an exhibition that was I'm under the impression, a gallery at the time called Multiples Inc. Multiples Inc., one of the owners of it was Marion Goodman. And so I don't know if the gallery was Marion Goodman Gallery at that time or Marion Goodman Gallery with a Multiples Inc. component, or if it was just called Multiples Inc. But in any case, there was this exhibition called Artists and Photographs. And what was shown in the exhibition was largely works by these same artists.
Exhibition catalog inside of that checklist of everything.
Exactly. A short essay by Lawrence Alloway, and then essentially short bios per artist included both in the show and in this box edition. And then information, a checklist essentially of works in the exhibition. And the works in the exhibition related to the works that are in this box. In many cases, and in other cases, they weren't the same at all. For example, the Bochner, it was a photo emulsion on paperwork, and that's not what he's included in this box.
Okay.
For Christo, there's Pack Tower, which is included in this box, but another version of it, so a kind of reproduction of it or another reworking or a representation of it. With Dibbitt's Perspective Correction 5 Piles, which again is included in this box as a thing, but what was shown was a pencil on paper with photograph and negative. So that obviously was some kind of, the work in the box is a reproduction or an extension of the unique work, you might say. With Gormley, it was a three-tier steel cabinet with color transparency, so that's what this is. Dan Graham, Carolel Projection, which has nothing apparently to do with his contribution for this box. Douglas Hubler, location piece number 2. I believe that does relate. Yes, it does. So this is a kind of extension of that piece. Capro, pose number 1. He showed for this a record of an event to be continued ad infinitum. It's not clear to me what this is by Capro in the exhibition. It's identified slightly different as Pose 1 opposed to just Pose. This was this piece,
it's
actually.
Pose 1 and 2.
Pose 1 and 2.
So maybe inside there's they're identified as Pose 1 and 2.
Right, except that on the cover it just says Pose. So It's I'm not exactly sure what was actually shown in the exhibition. Anyway, this is a happening that was done by Capro and others around Berkeley in 1969. In fact, this piece is an element of the Paul McCarthy show presently at the Wattis in San Francisco. Pont-Neuf by Kirby. What is contained in this box is a variant of what is what was shown in the exhibition. Notebook on Water.
So these are all conceptual art pieces that had photographic documentation or photographic element.
Not exactly. These are all artists that were producing art in the 60s and 70s. Some of them associated with conceptual art, some of them associated with happenings, and others associated with minimalism, some having to do with, some being more well known for being associated with Nouveau Realism. And, you know, then there's pop artists as well, because Warhol is included, as is Rauschenberg. So it's basically the selection is of artists who were using photography at that time in some form. In their art, and obviously this was a very solid selection of artists to do an edition with, as these artists were, artists of great interest for that moment and are still today. Uh-huh. Anyway, I could continue on through this catalog in more detail, but maybe it's more interesting to discuss the things themselves. So the cover of the box is you could say a work as well, and that is by Dan Graham, some sort of photo documentation of him performing some film work on the beach. I'm not sure what this piece is called. Probably should know that, but I don't. Anyway, I've already sort of briefly mentioned the Rauschenberg and Gormley. For the work by Christo, Pack Tower, Spoleto, Italy, 1968, it comes in a box as well, so it's a box in a box. And inside, like one of his collages, which he produces largely to fund projects and to document work, you have essentially cards reproducing the site, the overall view of the community of Spoleto, and then how the tower looked in a realized form, and how it looked in a drawn form. I'm not sure what the unique work looked like, but this certainly bears some relationship, I'm imagining. Okay.
The exhibition had documentation of the actual work, or it had a sculpture, or
it had a photo documentation work. What he showed, his contribution for this exhibition, it just is identified as adjuncts to the work, so it kind of an extension or a detachment to the work in four parts. One part was a selected location, so like that map form. Two, a sketch, probably like that sketch here. A photo montage in relief, and a record of the executed work. Each was 28 by 22 inches. Uh-huh. Okay? So I'm imagining that this is some kind of reproduction or extension of the work that was shown. Yeah. Mm-hmm. With Bochner, who showed something completely different, as previously mentioned, what he did here is he gave...
theory of photography.
Yeah, theory. It's Misunderstandings, the Theory of Photography, Mel Bochner. which is essentially handwritten and then reproduced on a manila envelope. And inside, on oversized note cards, you have various statements that are noted and identified from that he found to be important as to theories on photography that have been misunderstood. By Taine, "I want to reproduce the objects as they are or as they would be, even if I did not exist." From the Encyclopedia Britannica, "Photography cannot record abstract ideas." By Duchamp, "I would like to see photography make people despise painting until something else will make photography unbearable." By Proust, "Photography is the product of complete alienation." How apropos. By Merleau-Ponty, "The photograph keeps open the instance which the onrush of time closes up. It destroys the overtaking, the overlapping of time." James Gibson. Then there's an image without a statement, which actually I'm not sure if that's supposed to be in there.
Really?
Yeah. This is odd. I'm more or less certain this is not supposed to be in there.
Do we still have our copy we can check it against online?
Well, this... I'm not sure. I'll have to look. I'm almost positive this has been just thrown in here. A text...
It's part of the archive.
Yeah. A text by Mao Zedong. The true function of revolutionary art is the crystallization of phenomena into organized forms. Something written by Zola and something by Wittgenstein. In any case, this was his contribution to the box, and is the only non-photographic. Well, this is the only non-photographic contribution to the box. I mean, it concerns photography, but there is no photographic component.
You mean that photographs aren't reproduced.
Right.
Yeah.
What's interesting that I noted in reading this Lawrence Alloway essay about the this box and this the show is that he refers to this L.A. Air as being photographed. Yeah, Bruce Nauman's L.A. Air, which was done after Bruce Nauman's Clear Sky, which was supposedly of San Francisco. The way the writer talks about this or writes about this book is that it's shots of the L.A. sky, okay? Mm-hmm. But in fact, that's completely incorrect. The artist is the writer is completely incorrect. This is just printing. This is not based on photographs at all. It's just printed. It's just printed material. Okay, so as is Clear Sky, neither publication.
You mean they weren't photographs.
Exactly. This is not. This deals with photographic imagery, or deals with the idea of photography. But this was not photographically generated. This is just printed. You know, the colors and the there's no photographic element here.
Okay, so it's just printed reproduction.
Exactly.
But a reproduction of what? Or it's just color? Is that what
you're saying? Exactly. It's printed colors, and to sort of give a suggestion of not so clean air in LA.
Uh-huh. Because the colors are like deep burgundy, red, orange.
Yeah.
Pretty exaggerated.
Exactly. One of the more interesting contributions is this torn photograph by Smithson, and they're all torn. Torn photograph from the second stop, rubble, second mountain of six stops on section. And this is a reproduction of what was shown in the exhibition. So... This comes directly from the work in the show.
So relating to his land art pieces, Smithson would make photographs, and why did he tear this one?
Good question. Why he tore it. Torn photograph of the second stop rubble. Exactly why he tore this photograph, I can't actually speak to that.
Something to do with the way he saw his work as sort of, you know, with mirrors and reproductions weren't really truthful, or that a stop along the way is...
I actually can't respond to that with any great insight. I would say that when I look at this piece, the sizing, when I see it cut up into four parts, it does sort of relate more to the size of some sort of mirror displacement, some sort of mirror that he may have put in, you know, the earth for at the site. Okay. Uh-huh. I can't really say definitively why he sort of tore this piece up. That is a good question. Maybe I should have done some thinking about it in advance. See if the catalog says anything, because that is curious. No. Something to certainly think about. So it may be experienced on the saw when the coordinates of an absent work. Earthworks such as orbits can sometimes be experienced on the spot, but not long. Not for long enough for many people. Documentation distributes and makes consultable the work of art that is inaccessible in a desert, say, ephemeral, made of flowers, but it is evidential, but it is not a reproduction in the sense that a compact painting or a solid object can be reproduced as illegible. The documentary photograph is grounds for believing that something happened. Yeah, I can't respond to that question.
Well, I mean, it sort of makes it, it's a photograph, and when it's ripped, it makes it more of a sculpture.
Mm-hmm. I guess it can be viewed in that.
Or it makes it more of a multiple, or more of a piece.
Mm-hmm. From the second stop rubble. Second mountain's six stops on a section.
Yeah, it's, a lot of these are very puzzling pieces.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is...
You know, I mean, to wrap your head around that Bruce Nauman was making a commentary on L.A. Air, but just was actually just loving to print beautiful colors in a book on a full-page mm-hmm. spread.
Right, well, I mean, I think it goes beyond that. I think with the Nauman piece, he's dealing with, you know...
Perception.
Yeah, and the nature of how photographs work by essentially by having a contribution in a publication concerning photography, and presenting something that has on a certain level the guise of being a photograph, but in fact is not, plays, you know, directly in, I mean, that's the inquiry, you know, is it photographic or not? I mean, a kind of a fundamental issue of the veracity of photographs, period. I guess this the Dibbets work for me is you know, pretty much just some kind of reproduction of a work or an extension of the work that he presented at the show. However, when you look closely at this element, the element on the right hand side here, how this was attached and thereafter photographed. Is quite interesting detail. One imagines that this somehow is an extension of the work, because certainly I've never seen a Dibbets piece that incorporates paper clips. So,
right. Well, the reproduction has multiples ink. Copyright information on it, so it's already a printed piece by them, so maybe it was what was included in the show, or
no, I don't think so. All
that,
these
that part's confusing.
Yeah, all these elements, right? But all these elements, all these elements note multiple
things.
Well,
they do, but this makes it look like it's actually on the reproduction, which it probably isn't actually. Now that you say that, it's probably just a printed element. But yeah, it has. Well, this is the transparency all clipped together, so that's like a plan drawing, and then all of it.
Well, that's what makes this a particularly curious contribution, is the fact that this element looks
applied.
Yeah, at the time of producing this poster. I mean, I do find it interesting that the Multiples Inc. Copyright information is so central to this work opposed to being on the back, but I guess it's a function also of printing, and it was obviously less expensive to print it that way opposed to printing it front and back. Oppenheim produced an artist book for this box.
I love this book.
Yeah. it's called Flower Arrangement for Bruce Nauman. And it folds out in some way similar to Ruscha's Every Building on the Sunset Strip. Although not exactly, but it has the accordion fold out for a good distance.
Uh-huh.
And why this is for Bruce Nauman, I can't say. They were in close proximity at that point in time. Both working in the Bay Area, and then also being an artist that would have been in many exhibitions at this, you know, many group exhibitions together, and working in a similar way or a related way. But I don't know why, you know, what makes this a flower arrangement for Bruce Nauman. In any case, this is this work.
Yeah, in the exhibition he showed something.
In the exhibition, let's just see what he contributed. Yeah, the actual photo piece, 7 by 7 inches by 80 inches, photographs mounted. So this is a reproduction of what he showed. I guess what I think is interesting about a lot of these contributions, and whether or not, you know, they really are artist books, or multiples for that matter, or just something in between. Because I always, one way of looking at an artist book or a multiple is that, you know, the artist decided that they were going to make this book as where the work was located, opposed to it being a reproduction of something. In other words, for example, on these Baldessari artist books, the fable book, the Aang and Other Parables, the Choosing Green Beans, those works all exist. Brutus Killed Caesar. Those works all exist as photo pieces, regular, large format photo pieces. But in fact, you know, they're always those works, which are in every book nearly on the history of artist books, are considered to be, you know, artist books by the artist, by Baldessari. And I guess the question is one, I mean, or the issue is one that, not the issue, I mean, I guess because the artist calls it an artist book, I guess it's an artist book. However, I find it interesting that it is written about, these books are written about in that way, simply because they do seem to be simply reproductions of existing works that are, maybe this is the more portable, the sort of cheaper version, the more democratic version of the work, but not anymore anyway, but for what they cost now. But in any case, I mean, I just think it's interesting how you distinguish a work like this by other artists, for example, Naumann, with all his artist books, they only exist as books. They're not, you know, they're not
photo pieces.
No, they're not reproductions of other works. And ditto with any number of artists.
Anytime you have a book, you're including text and imagery, and sequence, and you're creating an experience that's different from looking at something on the wall or out in another place. It has a different sort of intention. So it is an artwork.
Mm-hmm.
It's a separate artwork.
Yeah, I understand that. And I clearly it's not the same in the book form as it would be on the wall or on the floor as a sculpture. If it's mm-hmm. it's clearly an extension of the work. But in some cases possibly even more successful as uh-huh. as a book or as a poster or whatever, as ephemera, if there was some sort of possible ephemera extension of the work. It's just that the idea, the genesis of the idea, is somewhere else, and I mean, so I find it interesting how it somehow gets sort of shoved into this category when in fact it somehow is it's not as neat a fit. On the other end, I guess artist books and multiples for that matter is a kind of dumping ground for things that don't quite fit in other categories. But I just thought I'd bring that up as some sort
no,
of notion.
No, it's appropriate here because of this one. This Dennis Oppenheim almost reproduces exactly what he showed in the exhibition, except that it has a title and his name. Mm-hmm. You know, it's accordion folded. Mm-hmm. But
one of the more special or exemplary contributions to this box is a book, an artist book by Ed Ruscha called Baby Cakes. Actual title is Baby Cakes with Weights. It's from 1970. It includes, I don't know, 16 photographs. It's a light blue wrapper covers with a bound by pink, what do we call this?
Satin ribbon.
Satin ribbon. And the cover is flocked, Baby Cakes. It's in his usual font, or approximately his font. It's unlike his other artist books from this period, or his other artist books, period.
It's 11:30.
The details of this book have are quite fanciful in that from being very matter of fact, a very matter of fact container of information, this has gotten a bit more decorative. It wasn't the first time he used flocking. It wasn't the only time he used flocking on the cover for the catalog that he designed for the Billy Al Bankston retrospective, which I forget if it's earlier or later than this. The book with sandpaper covers that are bolted. The title Billy on the cover is pink flocked. In any case, it's basically, as you can see, a picture of a baby as the first image, and then cakes throughout.
Hostess cakes, homemade cakes, packaged cakes,
which are all with information concerning
ounces.
Each one with the weight
the
of
weight,
the cake.
The weights of the cake. Mm-hmm. So, with weights. Mm. Less puzzling than some of the others,
yes.
Maybe.
Photos in this book are by Elizabeth Clayman, who I don't know. Sid Felsen was one of the photographers. Sid Felsen is one of the principals of Gemini, GEL, the editioned venue in uh-huh. Los Angeles. Jerry McMillan, the photographer who took many pictures of Ruscha and for Ruscha, Dana Ruscha, and Ruscha himself. Anyway.
The Ruscha being a special case where his books are traded as really, you know, coveted artworks. How often do you see that book being offered for sale as a separate entity from the box?
One does, because people over the years have broken these boxes up and sold the contents. In fact, for years and years, and maybe even still today, Multiples Inc. has sold individual contents from this box. It wasn't always available altogether.
So maybe they had the 600 copies left over that they never assembled.
That's possible.
It's
possible. I don't know the real story, and I have a feeling that it had something to do possibly with the separation of Multiples Inc. from, because it looks like this was co-published with Color Craft, and maybe Color Craft's side part of the edition, that something went on with that, or who knows. These contents do get broken up, and you see them periodically. Baby Cakes isn't so common to find, because it would be one of the more collectible items in this box edition, and that people, because of the nature of collecting Ruscha books in trying to get complete sets, this again would be something that this would be more of a coveted item than many of the other contributions, just because of the general collectability of Ruscha.
But then you've got the Gormley that doesn't appear in very many boxes, but it's just that if you want a complete set, you have to get that,
right.
But it's not necessarily
easy
to find either.
Yeah, I know. I think the Baby Cakes is easier to find than the Revolver and the Gormley. I just have a feeling that those the multiples were produced in a smaller edition, and thus the rarity of those two. In regards to the rest of the contents, I guess I'd rather move on and discuss the seven objects at this point.
We don't have to rush if you feel like there's something you've left out.
Okay. I guess the Warhol contribution is worth showing, although I don't find it to be particularly... It isn't the most interesting contribution, although it would clearly be desirable as well. But it reproduces in oversized reproductions or reproductions, color reproductions of his photo silk screen based paintings. You've got classic images, Marilyn, self-portrait, Elvis, Jackie's, portrait of Rauschenberg, Mona Lisa, The Cow, Elizabeth Taylor. So classic paintings reproduced and offset on cardstock. So it's rather nice looking, but not...
Did he photocopy Mona Lisa? Looks like a photocopy Mona Lisa.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that's just the silk screen process. So anyway, that's the Warhol contribution.
That's just like what you consider not an artist book at all, because it's just straight reproductions of his paintings.
Right. I mean, I almost wonder his level of engagement with the project, in that his contribution to the show was a self-portrait, a painting owned by Castelli. And I wonder, no matter what, there wasn't a super amount of engagement to this project, in that it does appear that these are mere reproductions of previously made works, but I don't know the details here, and maybe he was more engaged than not in the project. The contribution by Bernard Vinet takes a book form, and it's essentially photo documentation by Photographer team, the photographer Shunk Kender, who was one of the most busy photographers of this time, mm-hmm. photographing artists of this generation, mostly doing performative like work and documenting ephemeral works in general. Anyway, this is documentation of Vinay giving various lectures on nuclear physics.
So Bernard Vinay was a mathematician, physicist, and artist.
Exactly his educational background, I can't tell you. Certainly, there is a body of work from the 60s and early 70s that is very, let's just say, science-based. But he later turns to making monumental sculpture of making outdoor sculpture. And so it is a bit of a it is interesting to look at this early work by him, which is certainly the less popular body of work that he created. And I see his work primarily being now as being somewhat decorative and not challenging. While this, what he's putting out here, looks to be quite interesting.
Challenging to the art world, yeah. Anyway, because yeah. it seems to be a photographs of a lecture on mathematics.
Right, well...
And graphs and diagrams.
Mm-hmm. This book basically has five parts, I suppose. Possibility for paintings, films, dance, poetry, theater, exploiting graphics with written or recorded explanations, and that's what these lectures. That's what's reproduced in this ring-bound book are these various talks and demonstrations on these concepts that he was trying to put forward. I can't tell. I don't know whether or not it's all a joke or if it's in seriousness. I think the Smithson, or excuse me, the Morris work is, although
I can't photograph it when it's that big.
Okay. This piece is a calendar format documentation of a time-based work that he showed in the gallery that he was exhibiting at that moment, which I believe was Leo Castelli Gallery, although I could, that may be, yeah, Castelli Warehouse. Continuous project altered daily. It's a photographic record of the project, which consisted of earth, water, grease, felt, plastic, wood, thread, light, photographs, and sound. And
this was an exhibition that was changing every day of every stage of the exhibition, and so
it was altered daily.
Every day,
yeah. And this is some kind of documentation of basically each day, or I'm not sure how long. Yeah, I'm not sure how long this show lasted. Whether or not it was the usual gallery show of 3 or 4 weeks, or if it was shorter. And you're right. This booklet is broken up in an interesting way. In that stage one is reproduced, stage two is reproduced, but then details of some of these stages are presented to get more of an idea of the materiality of what was being altered daily.
And this kind of documentation could, it really is suitable to a book form because you have a reproduction of an exhibition in a pretty traditional sense, but you wouldn't be able to see it in this sequenced out way unless you were able to see it in a book. if you went back to that exhibition every day, you'd be able to see the changes. But otherwise, you're dependent on the book to see what the exhibition, what, you know, the heart of the exhibition was.
Absolutely. This is a great example of how an artist may have contained a work for a larger audience, because certainly there wouldn't have been a lot of people to visit the gallery per stage, and this is certainly an excellent container for it. I wonder what the actual photo piece looked like and its similarity to this, but in any case, this particular publication, I think, is very successful both on how it contains the project, but also invigorates the form as well, the book form. The Graham piece is basically two essays that he produced concerning the photographic territory. Photographs of Motion is one of the essays, and the other one is Two Projects for Slide Projectors. And I'm not positive if either one of these essays appears in another publication, as Graham was very active at a certain moment in time in writing for publications or producing works where their location was a publication, opposed to, you know, a photograph on the wall or...
And he's the artist on the cover.
Yeah, he did the cover box, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're Motion, filmic, sequencing, mm-hmm. things he was interested in, yeah. Projection.
Another contribution, we're getting closer to finishing this box, but... another contribution by an artist that is known for using photographs to register his work is Richard Long, and this piece is called Rain Dance. It's basically a 3/4 mile traveling piece documented by 4 photographs of the Rift Valley in East Africa. This work was not included in the exhibition. I'm not sure if he was included in the exhibition, as it's not really identified. I guess it says not in the exhibition.
Listed?
Well, he's listed as an artist, but I guess he was not in the exhibition for some reason. In any case, Long, the British land artist, basically... either took photographs of
it's 11:45.
Particular sites that he found to be particularly emblematic or evocative of a particular walk, what he wanted to say about a particular walk that he went on. And sometimes these photographs are like this is basically, I guess what we see here is this rainstorm, essentially, at a certain time of the late afternoon, early evening, or it could be early morning, I guess, as well. What also Long could have done is would be photographing some kind of subtle alteration he had made to the landscape, either walking a straight line for, you know, a period of time until there was some kind of line that was created by him walking, and so photographing this line, or for him to build some sort of temporary sculpture, combining a number of found sticks or found whatever into a piece, and then photographing it, and then essentially putting this material back to more or less where he found it. He is definitely conscious of his intrusion upon, you know, the natural landscape. And if he wasn't making a photograph of, you know, a place or of some sort of, let's just say, intrusion by him or alteration by him to a space, to a place. He would also produce graphic works, which were basically text-based of, his some sort of message which he felt could convey the sort of experience of the walk. Those are some of the more transportable ways, or the photographic ways and the graphic art ways that he translated these walks. The works that you see in galleries that are not on the wall are another thing. But the way that the material is generated is somehow different in terms of the removal of the material. It's one thing with mud. It's another thing with the rocks or wood, and where how the material is taken from the place, I think, is quite variable. And I think over time, he's even been more sensitive to how that material is removed. I don't think when he does a large slate piece somewhere, the slate is coming from a place that's selling slate, opposed to him taking it from a site in nature.
So, wait, you're saying that he does take it from a specific site, or he gets it? It's produced by a slate mill.
It's produced by a slate mill, but it's coming from a particular place. Okay. In other words, it's not absolutely clear to me that a sculpture that takes the form of, let's just say, some sort of rock, stone, whatever, or some sort of
wood.
Those materials these days, he is interested in, his selection of materials is particular, and if it relates to some sort of walk that he did, which is more often than not, he's going to get the material from that locale, okay? So some slate producer in that locale.
Okay.
The form of this is basically you might say, a small size photo piece by him. Also, it's interesting how it has a postcard format.
Yeah.
And for long, for him to have produced something in a postcard format makes a lot of sense, in that even by this time, 1970, he would have been, a ways along his production of producing printed ephemera on the occasion of an exhibition by him, there is an entire book published by the CAPC in Bordeaux concerning only his postcard related works. The other contributions here by LeWitt and Hubler. The Hubler piece essentially is some kind of detachment or reproduction extension of
location piece number two.
Right, of the piece that he showed as a unique work in the exhibition. Location piece number two in New York City, Seattle, Washington. The score, just to get an idea here.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
The
score is, in New York and Seattle, an area was arbitrarily selected within which a person in each city photographed places that he or she felt could be characterized as being frightening, erotic, transcendent, passive, fevered, and muffled. Within each area, each person made two entirely different sets of six photographs, after which all four sets were sent to a third person, the artist, with no information that would make it possible to key any one of the photographs with any one of the words originally specified. The four sets, 24 photographs, were then scrambled all together, and then 12 of these arbitrarily selected for this piece. To those were added four photographs that had not been made to characterize any kind of place. 16 photographs, a Xerox map of New York, and another of Seattle, joined with this statement to constitute the form of this piece. and then his signature is reproduced in facsimile. So typical, typical Hubler. I recall a photo edition that was published by Nova Scotia College of Art and Design, which has a related element in that the purchaser of the print was supposed to send Hubler a note to get this photograph sent to him, him or her, to complete the piece. And when I asked Douglas about the selection process of the photo, and these photos are particularly non-remarkable, which is the case with Hubler photographs in general. He really is seeing the photographic material as being information only, and there's the quality that the framing of them.
Investigating meaning, giving people some meaning to go with, and then giving them a job to do, and then he scrambles it and then edits it and then says, well, here's what we have, but it's not necessarily, doesn't necessarily relate to these words at all.
Right.
But then, you can't help but read into it because you've already seen those. Yeah.
Well, I guess that's maybe the one of the messages, that how one addresses photographs, and the fact that, basically, it almost it seems like for this piece and a number of other pieces, that the actual photograph doesn't exactly matter, or that the veracity of the photograph is basically non-existent for him in some form. Anyway, regarding that piece that I was talking about, he had a packet of photographs that he just stuck his hand into, essentially, and sent one off to the person, which I guess he had at a certain point identified this block of photographs as being appropriate for this to complete these pieces, but it didn't matter to him. So they're all unique photo. I mean, in a way, it's a print edition, which is an edition of 50 or whatever. But the photographic element, or one of the photographic elements, is unique per piece. Anyway, most of those works were never completed. I'm not sure if that has much to do with this box, but I just thought I'd provide that. I guess that completes the discussion of, this is as much as we're going to talk about this Artisan Photographs box today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think that was a very complete discussion of the Artisan Photographs box.